Good morning. Last week we began the discussion of the concept of pshara. When you go to a din Torah, very often Bezdin does not paskin the din. They make a compromise, a pshara. And it is a concept that is very, very, very widely misunderstood. So as we began explaining last week, there are two kinds of pshara. The first kind of pshara is a negotiated settlement, mediation, if you will, where Bezdin speaks to the two parties and gets them to agree to a settlement. Bezdin isn't imposing anything. They're not acting as an arbitrator. It's mediation. They get the parties to voluntarily accept a pshara. As we explained, there are basically two approaches that a Bezdin uses to accomplish this. The first is when people go to a din Torah, each side comes in very confident that they are completely right, and that the other side is being completely irrational and unreasonable for not simply conceding the case. Once the din Torah begins, each party has an opportunity to present their claims to the Bezdin. The Bezdin asks questions, go back and forth. So very often, in most cases, you can get the parties to agree that if had the tables been turned, had they been in the other person's position, they would have probably be making the same arguments that he is, that a reasonable person could accept or could argue either side of the case. And if you're able to accomplish that, the parties are very often more open to a pshara, partially because they no longer know whether they're actually right. They don't know what a Bezdin will do. And therefore, it is simply from a business perspective, very often wise to settle with a settlement where they're giving up something, but they can live with it, as opposed to the possibility of losing the entire case. And secondly, even if they're still confident that they'll win the din Torah, if they hear that the other person has a reasonable claim, they realize that they did something wrong or the other person suffered because of their actions, even if they're still convinced that they're right in the actual merits of the case, they're very often more open to arriving at some sort of settlement, at some sort of pshara. Now, halacha encourages such behavior. The Gemara says it's pshara is considered tzedek u'mishpat or mishpat v'shalom, where you have a combination. You mana shalom. The parties are often very better off if they agree to a settlement as opposed to going down to the wire and fighting over every last dime. Now, even this kind of settlement has its limitations, and that is it's machlokes rishonim how far to take this, but a bezdin can push a pshara. When the parties first come, when they first start the case, the Bezdin does not know yet who is correct. They just hear the party's position. So then the Bezdin can encourage them, instead of fighting it out, instead of each person getting what they're entitled to al pi din, it is better for everyone to have a settlement and to make a pshar. However, once the din Torah is over, and there's a machlokes rishonim how far this goes, According to Rashi, this applies only when there's actually a psak din. Bezdin says one person is chayiv. At that point, for Bezdin to try to pressure the other party to give in anyway and make a settlement would be aser. This is either because it's a bezoyin for Bezdin. It sounds like they're not confident in the psak for them to say that you're chayiv and then to try to say, but make a payment anyway. Or there are other pshatim. But Tosfos argues. Tosfos says that after the psak, there's no pshara because it's impossible. How do you make a pshara once you've already told the parties who's right and who's wrong? The Gemara means that once Bezdin knows who's right and who's wrong, even though they didn't issue a psak yet, they heard the parties' arguments, they know what's going to happen. They've already in their minds decided what the psak is going to be. At that point, Zaktosis, it is also for them to push a pshara, because the parties would never accept it had they known the Bezdin, the person who was giving up his halachic rights would not accept it had he known that the Bezdin already had made a decision. And therefore, Tosfos says, Bezdin cannot push a pshara at that point. It's only in the beginning. Bezdin did not yet conclude who is right and who is wrong. They don't know the halacha. At that point, they still have the right to push the parties into a negotiated settlement. Now, as far as halacha l'maisa, the Ramah and the Shach both paskin that you could encourage a pshara until there's actually a psak din. Even if Bezdin knows where things are heading, they still have the right to make a pshara. However, the Bach and the Birkei Yosef says, brings this, the Pesach Yitzchuk brings down the Birkei Yosef, the Pasins like Tiras L'maisa, they say that no. Once a Beis Din knows already what's happening, at that point it's not appropriate to push a Pshara. Now in practice, this is usually not so relevant, really for two reasons. In general, when there is a Din Torah, usually both parties have an argument in Halacha. And usually have him sunim b'din. It's very rare to have a din Torah where there's a open shot, clear cut, one person's right, one person's wrong. In general, there's a lot going on. There are a lot of different tainas and tfiyas. Some are stronger, some are weaker. And every din Torah involves to some extent, besides the hachra on the actual halacha, the sugya, there's also being medama milsa l'milsa. It's very rare to have a situation which is exactly described in the Gemara. So once it's a judgment call, once you have to medama milsa l'milsa, the Beis Din may have a leaning towards a particular side, but it is rare for at the session, immediately for the Dayanim to know exactly what the Hachra will be, that we will run into this problem of the Birkei Yosef, and therefore, b'derech klal, the Beis Din can push a pshara regardless. Now I would add, if it's such a simple case, if it's such a clear case of right and wrong, that one person is clearly going to lose the Din Torah, very often, there's no reason to make a pshar. You know, psharas are made for one of two purposes. They're made either m'man ha-shalom, or because they will discuss different sekas in halacha. If it is so clear-cut, there's no suffix in halacha, so then that is not a reason to make a pshar. Elamai, you should make a pshar l'man ha-shalom. So even there, it depends. If a person goes over to you and says, makes up a claim, you owe me $3 million. You say, l'hadam, I don't know what you're talking about. And the Bezin concludes that you're right. There's no basis to this claim. Bezin is not going to say, Laman HaShalom, okay, listen, he asked for $3 million, let's give him $100,000 because he'll be happier that way. That's not Laman HaShalom. Laman HaShalom is when there's a real basis for it, there is room for the claim, whether it will work, whether it will prevail with the technicalities of Halacha or not, but there is real basis for a claim, then Laman HaShalom, Bezin will get involved and will try to push some sort of settlement. In general, if it's something which is so clear-cut that the claim is completely frivolous, there's generally no reason, even l'man ha-shalom, for a pshara. The only time this really comes up is when you have a claim which clearly does not work in halacha, but there is some sort of lotzis de shemayim, there is some sort of iyashus that was done. In those cases, as far as at least our hanhaga l'maisa is, we will try to push a pshara. But when we try to push the pshara, we will tell the party, and instead of calling the party in and telling him, number one, l'man ha-shalom, it's a good idea. Number two, you might lose the case, and therefore it might be worth it for you to settle instead of running the risk of losing. We will drop out the second part of the speech. We will just focus on the shalom. We will say, even naniach that you're right, assuming that you're right, and then you don't. But l'maisa, you made a mistake. Someone suffered because of what you did. Are you willing to pay something to be mefayizim, l'man ha-shalom, in order the person should not have tainus on you? And that certainly can be done. When the Beis Din is not making any representations or intimidating him that he may lose the case, they're saying, you're right, or naniach that you're right, but l'man ha-shalom, are you willing to make a pshara? There, the place can say, even after the psak din, that's mutter. Because in that case, where you're saying, you're asking for pshara only l'man ha-shalom, only because of this yashurus, this avu that was done, so there you're not misrepresenting anything, you're not fooling them into thinking that they have to settle or they'll lose, you're not backtracking from the psak din, you're saying, okay, you may be right al pi din, but l'maisa you have a very angry customer, you have a neighbor that you have to deal with for the next couple of decades, so it might be kedai for you to settle just to calm things down. Recently I had a case like this involved. A person hired a contractor to build a house. They had settled on a certain price. When they signed the contract, the homeowner wanted there to be a cap in the contract that it will not go above a certain price. The builder said no. He said, listen, this is my estimate. I'm good. I'm a professional. I've been around for many years. I'm confident in it, but I'm not ready to put it in the contract. I'm not ready to be bound by it. Sure enough, the house went up, and it was over budget. So the homeowner claimed that you had given me a firm commitment, you said I shouldn't worry about it, I don't want to pay anything above that original estimate. The builder countered that no, it's true I made a mistake, I apologize, I had left out, when I gave you the estimate, I didn't take certain things into account. But the bottom line is, I didn't give you a cap, it wasn't in the contract, and I did the work, I want to get paid the full amount. Now in this particular case, again, I'm going to leave out all of the background and the details, but the halacha was clearly like the contractor. There was no cap. By not putting in the contract, he was making it pretty clear that although he had confidence in his estimate, he was not ready to limit or be bound by it. And al pi din, the contractor was right. But the bottom line was, the homeowner had budgeted exactly, he had exactly what he had money set aside for this construction. And he simply couldn't afford to go above it. It wasn't a question of him just playing hardball. He did not have the money to pay the extra amount. So in this case, the halacha was clearly like the contractor. But mitzad sheni, the contractor had made a mistake. It was something which was, whether it was negligence or certainly unprofessional, certainly something which, and as a result of his mistake, the buyer suffered tremendously. So in such a case, what we did is we called in the contractor and said, again, let's assume that I'll be doing your right. But the bottom line is you made a mistake. Because your mistake, someone relied on your opinion. Because of that, they suffered tremendously. Are you willing to give something or be mevater on something because of that? Number one, it's very bad customer service if you have a client who's going to walk around having a very legitimate claim on you. He's right. He's right for being upset. It was you, Taka, made a mistake. So al pi din, you may not be liable for it, but are you ready to face up for your mistake and be mefayis him because of it? And kachava, they went out, they made their cheshbonos, and Taka came back with a very nice offer, willing to cut off a fair amount of the excess bill. But what's actually interesting is they said, we're willing to settle, we're willing to give him this very significant discount because we feel, again, we're taking responsibility for what we did, we want him to be happy. But we're only offering this pshara if the Bezin will call him in and tell him that al-Pidin, he's wrong. And the contractor knows al-Pidin, that he has the right to go ahead. But Laman HaSholem, in order to make a customer happy, he's willing to knock out this amount. And Kachava, that's what we did. The homeowner actually rejected the offer. It was what happened afterwards is a long story, which is actually another piece of advice, that if you go to a Din Torah and the Beis Din is very aggressively pushing a pshara, again, now they'll always push a pshara because we'll get to, there's a mitzvah, perhaps a chiv on Beis Din to encourage it. But if you see they're going over the top and just not taking no for an answer, it probably means that the Beis Din decided al pi din, you're wrong. And if you don't take the pshara, you're getting nothing. And therefore, if the other party is ready to offer something, they're going to do whatever they can to get you to accept it because you're better off accepting it than walking away with nothing. So, again, every bezin operates differently, but if you do see it's not just encouragement, that you're really being pushed into it, it's probably in your best interest to accept the offer. Yes. Yes, there is, again, it depends. If mediation is voluntary, then it's not our case. No one's making a decision. The person's just going back and forth trying to get the parties to a heskim. That would be us. When it's arbitration, even though it's not a court, but arbitration is our case, would apply to, the one exception would be is if they're not following rules. If the arbitrator is just doing what's fair, not based on a civil law or a set of goyish rules that are, in a sense, competition or a replacement for halacha, then it would be mutter. But if they have rules, whether it's the court rules, the civil rules, or whether it's their own private rules, then already this sort of hakoyis would apply. But mediation, when they're not making any hachlata, they're just talking to everyone, that's nothing.
Why is it that the homeowner has no extra money to pay their contract and doesn't owe money going forward?
That's true, and that's part of what happened. And again, I don't want to go back. There was a lot going on in that case. I'm not going through all of the details and the pratim and why the halacha was like that. My point was more that when you have a case where the halacha is clear in one way, you can't go ahead and push a pshara. Again, it's machlokes. Before the psak din, it's a machlokes rishonim. The shach and ramah say you could encourage psharas, but the bezin can't lie. They can't imply to the person that if you don't accept this, you may end up losing everything if they've already determined that he will win al pi din. What they could do is say, lamaisa, you have a very angry customer who the anger he he has the right to be upset because you did make a mistake, you did do something which, as a professional, you know, you should not be proud of, and that itself is a reason to make an offer, to arrive at a settlement, so to make him happy. Yeah, correct. In this particular case, it was not terribly over. It was within the normal range, and again, that's one of the reasons why the contractor was right. But again, I don't want to go into the details of the case. That's not my point here. So this is the first kind of pshara where it's mediated, where Beis Din just encourages the party to settle. If they say no, they say no. This is the Beis Din's not forcing anything. They're just mediating, they're encouraging the parties in order to arrive on a settlement that the two of them accept. If there is a settlement, as we mentioned last time, they have to mekabel kinyan. They have to make a kinyan to be bound. Otherwise, the fact that they settled, it's dvarim ba'alma, it's simply words, and they can change their mind. Even if it's done in Beis Din, again, there's some that argue, but most places can say even though it's done in a Beis Din, still, in the absence of a kinyan, they will have the right to back out. And that's why if you ever go to Beis Din and there is a settlement, the Safra Dedaina will go to each party, hand them a pen, they'll make a kinyan siddur. The point of that is to lock everyone into the settlement so they cannot be chayzer, they cannot change their mind. A problem that comes up or a complication is very often there's a deal on the table, there's a settlement offer, and one of the parties says, I want to think about it. Okay, they want to think about it, fine. So, calls back the next day, he's ready to accept it. However, he's not in Beis Din anymore. In theory, in such a case where there's a negotiated settlement, where there was just a verbal acceptance the next day, there's nothing stopping the person who offered the settlement to change his mind. No kinyan was done. He made the offer, the deal was only accepted the next day. So in such a case, if you want to be banned, if you want to make sure the settlement actually happens, you have to have the parties either come back to Beis Din or at least be makabel kinyan in front of Edim to be locked in that they cannot simply go ahead and change their mind the next day.
Does the Beis Din draft the settlement in writing first?
It depends on the situation. Very often we will do that to make sure there are no complications later. And in Echanami, if there is something in writing which they sign and becomes a shtar, that itself could be a kinyan. But they're not going to do it until the offer is actually accepted, because they're not going to spend the time.
Sometimes you think you settled on something, then you get into a big fight. What is it you settled
about? Correct. What we generally do is settlements, as we mentioned last time, when there's an attempt to mediate this kind of pshara, Beis Din very often will speak to each party separately. Simply as a negotiating tactic, it's a lot easier. You get a much more honest answers, and you get a better feel for what's really important to the parties if you speak to them privately. Now, as we mentioned last week, you cannot do that in the context of a din Torah. Shemaya ben Achechem, having ex parte communication is aser sai al pi halacha and will invalidate the legal enforceability of the arbitration. However, when the parties agree that they feel they could be a settlement, the Beis Din will ask permission. It will generally be granted. We will ask permission to speak to each party separately to try to get to the settlement. What happens is the Beis Din has to go back and forth until they find the middle ground. At the end, if they are successful, at that point they would generally call both parties in, review the settlement offer to make sure everyone's on the same page, and at that point, if there's a Heskim, if there's an agreement, there'll be a Makabel Kinyan to finalize it, and at that point, afterwards, they will generally write it up. So this is the first kind of pshara where it's mediation, you're talking, it's voluntary, it only happens if the parties agree to it. And as we mentioned, you can only do it before, again, so it's after the Pesach Din, you certainly can't do it. If the Beis Din knows where things are heading, that already is a machlokes. In general, I think Batei Din would push a pshara even in that case, but they would just push it with a different tact, but they would push it explaining what the basis for the pshara l'man hashalem as opposed to doing it in order to avoid losing the din Torah. The second kind of pshara, which is probably the more common, is a pshara which when you initiate the din Torah, when you sign the shtar brurah in the arbitration agreement, you begin the process. The first question that you'll be asked is, do you want pesher? Do you want pesher karv l'din? Or do you want din? And essentially what the Beis Din is asking you is, what kind of authority are you going to give the Beis Din? If you sign for din, which most Batei Din will actually not even give this as an option, If you sign for a din, you're telling the Beis Din, I want you to pass him what the halach is. I want the din. I don't want psharas. I don't want pesher karev din. I want the straight halach. Now, if a Beis Din offers this option, Beis Din cannot force the parties to accept pesher or pesher karev din unless both parties agree. Because by agreeing to pshara, or by pesher karev din, you're essentially asking the parties to waive some of their halachic rights, to allow Beis Din to be mefasher, to give them less than their entitled al pi din, l'man ha-shalom, or for whatever other reasons there are. A party can say, no, I want what I'm entitled to, I want the din. And therefore, for the Beis Din to have the right to paskin based on pesher, you need both parties haskin. The same thing is true in the levels of pshara. There's pesher karev l'din, which means the Beis Din can make a pshar, but it has to be karev l'din, it has to be close to the psak halacha. They're limited how far they can veer. We'll get to the details soon. And then there's pesher, where the Beis Din has a much broader right to make a settlement based on what they think is fair. They're not bound to the din. Now, in this question as well, if one party says, I want the Beis Din to be mefasha, forget about what the din is, I want the Beis Din to do what they think is right. The other party says, not so fast. I'm willing to give them a little bit of leeway, pesher, but I want it to be karev l'din. I want it to be close to what I'm entitled to. So in this case as well, you cannot force someone to accept the full pshara, because the person who's asking for karev l'din says, I'm not ready to be mevater so many of my schosim, you can't force him to do so. So whoever wants the closer to din, the stricter level, he is the one that will prevail. You cannot be forced to accept pshara. Now in these cases, where you're makabel the Beis Din to, and when you start the din Torah, you give the authority to paskin based on either pesher or pesher karev l'din. What happens is the Beis Din now can make a pshara without your consent. They will listen to the two sides. They will generally determine what the real halacha would be, and then they will take various factors into account, which we'll list soon, and adjust the din to be mafasha. It's important to realize, simply because you gave the Beis Din the right to make a pshara does not mean that they will. In a case where there's a clear right and wrong, the halacha is clear, the as far as the fairness or yashrus and latzis d'ishim, there are no outside factors that will push Beis Din to veer from the din, they will paskin din even if you come for pesher or pesher karev l'din. So the point is not that you are guaranteeing a pshara, that you come in for pshara and have suddenly Beis Din will automatically just split the baby and divide the claim in half. What it means is, if there's a clear din, Beis Din will follow the din, but Beis Din has the right, if they see there are reasons and justifications of veering off the din or making a pshara, they have the right to impose that pshara. They don't have to ask for permission. They can issue it as a psak din, as an arbitration award, without getting the party's consent. It's a difficult question to handle. What actually happened in that case is that the contractor initially did not want to sign a shtar brurin at all. They didn't want to be bound to they didn't want to be bound to the ultimate psak. So they ended up coming without any kinyan whatsoever, and neither party was bechlal bound to listen to what the maskana was. Now, as very often happens, what turned out is the contractor won at least al pi din. I was very open with them that al pi din they were right, but because there was no shtar brurin, there was no kinyan, they could not enforce it, and therefore, again, the settlement didn't work out at the end. The contractor was then in a position where, if they wanted to pursue it, they would have had to initiate another din Torah. It's hard to figure out what would have been. There were a lot of facts going on in that case, but in a case where a person is negligent, he's supposed to have a certain level of knowledge, someone relies on him, that is basis to make a pshar. The pshar probably would not have been as generous as the offer that the person made, but there would have been a pshar because it was a legitimate claim, the person had done something wrong, and in pshar you can take this into account. Now, what are the different reasons or sibois that a Beis Din can use to make a pshar? So we'll go through a list of it. It's not all of them are entirely clear, and a pshara is more of an art than a science. There are no hard, fast rules, but there are some general principles that are clear. The first, as we mentioned before, is you don't make a pshara for no reason. The same way that there are halachos about how to run a din Torah, when the party assigned for Pesher, the dayanim have to obey all the rules, and you cannot be mata the pshara either. You can't, for no good reason, go ahead and just throw it to one side because you have the right to do so. The psharas have to be based on legitimate and real reasons. When making the pshara, so the Gemara's reason for pshara is l'man hashalom. If you see there's a fight, as you mentioned before, it has to be a real fight, not just some frivolous, ridiculous claim. But if you see there's a fight, and you have two neighbors, you have two partners, you have two siblings, so in that case, it is very often appropriate, even though al pidin one will prevail, it is very often appropriate to make some sort of settlement to buy the peace, if you will. It's true, it'll cost them a few dollars and cents, but in the long run, having the shalom, having the party, preserving the relationship between the parties may likely be more important. Now, to show how far it goes, halacha is by Mois Yisaimim, if someone is charged with the responsibility to care for money that belongs to Yisaimim, even so, if there's a fight and it's a machlokes, and the Beis Din sees that even though the Yisaimim are right, but they can be mefasher, give a few dollars, and stop the machlokes, they'll create shalom. So in such a case, the halacha is the apotropos has the right, and the Beis Din has the right to impose a pshara, even though Mois Yisaimim is on the line. Now, I cannot tell you how many times this happens. There is a din Torah. One of the particular parties is a moisir. So the person makes his claim. And then the fellow representing the moisir gets up there and says that I want the Bezin to know that I'm dealing with Mois Hekdesh. And it's not my money. Had it been a personal fight, I'd be mavater. I don't get into din. I'm going to din Torah. I always go with him Mishur Sadeh. But over here, we're talking with Mois Hekdesh. Here it's not my money, I don't have the right to go ahead and be mevater on Hekdesh's money, and that's why we're in the Din Torah, because I have to push and get everything that I'm entitled to. In halacha, that's clearly not true. In halacha, it's clear that l'man hashalom, even Mois Yisaimim, the Beis Din has the right to make a pshara and even force a pshara, l'man hashalom. That is considered the toiva, and that is considered a very good use of Mois Hekdesh. Kolshkein v'kolshkein, if the situation is such, where on the moisid, what had happened, there is a chiv lotzis de shemayim, or the frim mishuros adin, I don't know of any makar that moisids are not have less of an obligation to be lotzis de shemayim. The whole moisid is there in order to be makayim the de shemayim, and therefore, in a case like that, where there is there is some sort of obligation or a reason to make a pshara, I would say adarabah, it's together ein adam choyte v'loy loy. And by Mois Hekdesh, again, if there's a legitimate basis, you certainly have the right and to make a pshara, and you certainly shouldn't be making more machlokes with a Mois than a private person's money. He's an apotropos. The same way every other decision he makes, he doesn't come to Beis Din. He is the apotropos. People entrusted him with a Mois tzedakah, and he has a discretion to make these decisions. So if he makes the hachlata that l'man hashalom, this is kedai, he would have the right to do so, just like every other decision that he makes. Now, if he doesn't know, so he should have to go to Beis Din to be mevar. But he certainly has the right, if he determines this is in best interest, he certainly has the right to do so. Now, a second case where we find an obligation to make a pshara is when there's a chi of shvua. Very often in a din Torah, there's a claim. You go to someone, you owe me $1 million. He says, no, I owe you $500,000. You have no evidence. That being said, this is a case of a moed mimiktsas. You've made a claim for $1 million. He's admitted that he owes you part of that claim. So although you cannot be moed mamon, there's an obligation for the nitva to make a shavuah. He has to either make a shavuah or he has to pay. In fact, if you look at the tshuvos that discuss dinei Torah, the focus of most tshuvos is simply a question of who has a chi of shvuah and is it a chi of shvuah d'oraisa d'rabbanan. Because if you have a fight with someone, unless the facts are clear and there's just a simple halacha issue, so then it's easy to make a psak one way or another. But in most cases where there's some sort of dispute over exactly what happened, people don't remember, people have different perceptions, whatever the issue may be, so there is a chi of shvuah. And that is the primary tool that they use to figure out what exactly happened. In a case where there is a chi of shvuah, Bezdin has the right to be mefasher and say, instead of making a shvua, we know, especially today, we're party, but people generally do not make shvuas. Bezdin has the right to say, instead of making a shvua, pay a certain amount, and that way you are buying out your obligation to make a shvua. Now the question is, how much is a shvua worth? How do you put a dollar sign on it? How do you put a value on it? How much are you mefasher to in order to avoid making a shvua? So here we have a different Malkiel, it's a similar Igros Moshe, that really, in a sense, blows open the entire Din Torah. What he says is like this. A shvua is something which is very chomer, even if it's the truth, our hanhaga is to avoid making a shvua, even if you know you're completely right. Zak the different Malkiel. Malkiel, if he starts by bringing down a takana from the Vara Aratzos, that the standard of a shvua, the value of shvua was a shlish. Whatever the claim was, if you knock off, if you had to make a shvua, but you would win, what they would do is they would be mefashe, they would knock off a third of the claim and pater you from a shvua. So the general number is that you'll hear thrown about is a shvua is worth a third of the claim, which means if you put in a claim where the defendant is nishba v'nifta, where the defendant would make a shvua and would not have to pay. So if he doesn't want to make a shvua, you want to be mefashe for it, you make him pay a third of the claim. And you pater him on the rest without a shavua. In the flip side as well, you have some cases that where the teveya is a nishba v'noita, the plaintiff will make a shavua and then he will be entitled to what his claim is. So in that case as well, we can knock off a third of a claim and he takes the two thirds without a shavua. This is true in the abstract. If there's a claim you don't know, true, not true, you don't know who's really right. So then, if halacha is nishba v'noitel or nishba v'nifter, we can be mefasher a third for the shvu. But Zakta Divrei Malkiel, if a normal shvu is worth a third, what happens if the Bezdin knows this fellow is lying through his teeth? It's not true. Or they very strongly suspect he's lying. Afal pikein, if the halacha in this particular case is, he's a nishba v'nifter, he's a muchzik, we have no evidence that he owes the money, so he can be a nishba v'nifter. So if he makes a shvua, Bezdin has no right to be moitzimam. But here, Bezdin is being mefasher, not for a shvua's emes. They're being mefasher for a shvua that they are convinced is a lie. So the different Malkiel, in that case, Bezdin can use their discretion and say this kind, not having to make a shvua sheker, that's worth a lot more than a third. That's worth almost everything. Now you can't say everything because Bezdin doesn't have a raya, they don't have edus. But in Hilchus Pshara, in figuring out how much a shvua is worth, Bezdin can use their discretion. What is the likelihood this is a shvuas emes or a shvuas sheker? And therefore, Bezdin has the right to veer from this a third number that you'll hear thrown bandied about is not a hard number. In a case where the claim seems frivolous, but there's a chi of shvua, Bezdin would be mefasher at most a token amount because they believe the defendant is correct. And in the opposite case, when the teveya seems right, the fact and just the nitva is ready to make a shvua, which the Bezdin strongly suspects is a shvua sheker, then they'll be mefasher for much more than the actual third. Now this, of course, gives the Bezdin a tremendous amount of leeway, because it means they have the right to, whatever the psak is, this is sort of a roundabout way to avoid the regular requirements of Eidos and Shvua and Migu and Chazaka, the regular Tayyim v'Nitan, because now already they have the right to be mefasher for Shvua based on what they feel is correct. And in Ilchanam, it is something, it gives the Bezdin a lot more Kayach, and therefore when you're in your decision of whether you want to sign Pesher or Pesher Karav Ludin, the more you give the Bezdin, the more right they have to use their judgment in figuring out what's correct and who's telling the truth and who isn't. Now another...
As far as a shvu,
they can really do even by din. This is brought down even by real din.
Even din,
when you're not makabal. This does not need their kabbalah for. But the more you give them, the more leeway they will take in the actual amount of the adjustment. So in din, there's no way they can do more than a third, no matter what, because that's the din. Their hachlotza or hashara of he's telling the truth, he's not telling the truth, they wouldn't go more than a third. In pesher, they certainly would do significantly more. And pesher karv l'din is a little bit less clear exactly how far they would go.
Why would they go? So the person who wants to make the shul would never be asking did anything beyond din. If that's the case.
Well, it's not so simple to know who has to make the shul. that's, you know, you have to be a bit of a Talmud Chacham to know what the end result will be. It's very hard to predict before you go to a Din Torah who will gain and who will lose from Pesher or Pesher Karev L'din. I'll get to, when I'm finished with the halacha, so I'll try to summarize and try to give some guidelines which way you're, you know, which way to go if you're in an actual Din Torah. But it's In general, yes. But there are many cases where you where there are chazakas or various things that the cheskes chiyuv, where the technicalities would be mechayev him, and if you sign him pesher, he'll be pater. But in general, more often than not, you'd be correct. But it's not across the board. Now, the last case of pshara, and this is less clear in halacha, is what happens in a case where the halacha is clear, but there's either a lifnim mishuros adin or a chiyuv lotzei yeshamayim on one particular party. It's not actionable in Beis Din. Al pi din, the person is pater. But there's lotzei yeshamayim. He did an avlo, he did something wrong. Or there's lifnim mishuros adin, which is similar, but it's not the same concept. So in this case, I think it really depends more on the particular Beis Din. I don't know if there's a clear hanhaga across the board how much they take these things into account when they're mafasher. In Pshara, I think most Batei Din would, because they would say if there's a chiyuv lotzei tzedei shemayim, if that means that always comes because you did something wrong, yidei shemayim, you're going to pay for this one day. It's just not actionable in Beis Din. So in Beis Din makes a Pshara, they have the right to say there's an avlo here, to be mafayus the person for this avlo, in order lotzei tzedei shemayim, make this particular payment. And I think most Batei Din do take it into account. But again, this is not completely clear in halacha.
And then he was yotze the chiyuv lotzei
shemayim? Yes. If the Beis Din is a mafasher and says... Correct. So when Beis Din is mafasher, they're taking liberties on both ends. On one hand, they're taking a liberty, they're making the mazik pay, even though Alpi Din, he doesn't have to. But their argument is, if you came for Din, that halacha is a yopater. If they came for Pshara, that means you want us to be mafasher based on the situation. Based on this situation, we think you should pay something. On the other hand, they're taking liberty on the Nizik. They're telling him, accept this and be moichel him.
And both sides are satisfied there.
Correct. When you if you're accepting the Beis Din to be mafasher, now the Beis Din may decide that in this case, there's no reason to knock off anything. And again, that's a judgment call. I can't say across the board what all Batei Din do. I think there are different hanhagos and different Batei Din. Correct. That will happen on occasion. And sometimes the Beis Din will write lehedya, that al pidin the person is pater. Ein biyad had Beis Din lechayvoy. Aval afal pikein, there is a chiv lotzis yishmayim, and yesh lo yilfaisa. Sometimes the Beis Din will not want to put a number on it, and they'll tell them, the parties want to know what the halacha is, this is the halacha. The halacha is al pidin, we can't force you to pay, but there's a reckoning in shemayim, and therefore the two of you should work something out, should come to a settlement. Now the last justification for a pshara, and this is also a bit unclear in halacha, but the Rosh paskins that when the Beis Din is mesupik, they have the right to make a pshara. Now this is even if you're not makabel the pshara, even if you're makabel din. But the halacha is Beis Din does not have the right to just be masal. Beis Din can't just walk away. Say, no, we don't know the halacha, we can't help you. Beis Din has to paskin kafi their knowledge. They can ask other people, they can send a shayla to another Beis Din, but they have an achrayus at the end of the day to come up with a psak. So if there's a suffix, they cannot determine what the halacha is, they have the right to be mafasha. Now, the kasha on this, and this is really not discussed much in the kadmoinim, but the kasha on this is that we all know there's a rule of hamoitzi mechaveo avaraya. If there's a suffix, the halacha is hamoitzi mechaveo avaraya, the muchzik wins. Even if it's a machlokes in halacha, there's a concept of kimli that we've discussed many times, that a person, the muchzik, can say it's a machlokes, he might have 10 rishayim that say I'm chayiv. But if two Rishayim say that I'm Potter, I have the right to say Kimli, I'm the Mochzik, you can't force me to pay. So Im Kain, what's Pshar in the Rosh? How could the Rosh say when Bezin's Mesupik, then they should make a Pshar? If Bezin's Mesupik, if it's a Suffolk in Halacha, either a Suffolk in Metzius, or Suffolk in Hura Paskin like, the general klal is Hamaitzim Echaveir Alvarai. But the din is, whenever there's a suffix, you can have 10 rishonim on one side, 2 on the other, the muchzik will prevail. So what does the rush mean? There's a suffix. Any suffix, we should say, kimli.
Kimli doesn't always apply.
But then it's not a suffix anymore. Then you're chayiv. So like this. So it'll come out, this rush is very limited. If you have a case where there is a suffix kimli, which there are all sorts of complicated cases in Simon Chavhei, a suffix who the muchzik is, mashal. You don't know who the muchzik is. There's a tvisa bershos, tvisa shaloi bershos. So you have a case where there's a suffix who the muchzik is, that is a case where there's no kimli. And there, if Bezin can't figure it out, there will be in that case, there will be mafasha. Alternatively, you can have a case where the Bez Din feels, let's say there are 10 Rishonim in one way, 2 the other way. Technically, there's a Kimli. However, let's say Bez Din's Machruya like one side. Bez Din has the right to have Achruya. If they have Achruya, Bez Din doesn't have a Suffolk anymore, they can be Machayev you. Kimli is not automatic. Kimli is when there's a Suffolk, you have to go ahead and give it to the Mokhzit because I might have arrived. But if the Bez Din wants to be Machruya like these 8 Rishonim, not like these 2 Rishonim, they have the right to do so. That being said, but they didn't very often are not ready to take a stand, say 100% the Rajba's wrong in this. Even though there are 8 Rishayim, even though they went through the sugya, they decided in Gansan like this. But so in such a case where Al Pidin the Bezin holds really the halacha is like this shita, and they have the right to make such a hachra, they're not arguing on a Tana, they're not arguing on a Moira, they're just being machriya like one shita that's brought down in the Rishayim. So they have the right Al Pidin to do so. But if they have Epis Asafik, they're not ready to go ahead and be Mechayiv and Gansen, so they're already in such a case, they have the right to be Mefasher for the Safik. So this rush is important. When there is a Safik, the Bezin has the right to be Mefasher, but it is limited because this is not meant to override the rule of Moitzu Mechabel Avaraya. It's in limited cases where Al Pidin, the Bezin, is either a Safik on the Mechzakis or a similar case, there the Bezin could make a Pshar. So let's now just spend a few moments focusing on the halacha l'maisa. When a person comes to a din Torah and he has this first choice, first decision, pesher, pesher karav l'din, or din, what is he best off choosing? So the first question is really how you define best off. Because if you define best off as far as who will win the din Torah, so then you'll have one set of answers. If you define best off as what the right thing to do is, so here already the Gemara says that pshara is preferred. And a Bez Din has a chiyuv to push a pshara, because even if Al-Pi Din you're right, the Gemara says that it is better, man ha-shalem, not to be to go ahead and fight for every penny that you're entitled to. It's better to be mefasher, or man ha-shalem, and therefore it's certainly, halacha certainly sanctions and encourages a person to agree to a pshara, even if in dollars and cents it may end up to his detriment. If a person wants to know as far as where he'll talk and be better off as far as winning the case, so I would suggest a few, you know, there are a few different things to take into account. The first is the nature of the din Torah. If you're dealing with someone owes you money, you want to collect the debt, and it's just a question of how much you're owed. So if you're ready, the din will get you, if you go with din, you'll get the answer that more accurately reflects Allah. On the other hand, if you're dealing with a partnership, and there are some issues there, when you sign for din, the psak is going to be who owes who money. The bezdin will not have the jurisdiction to start making arrangements for things to work better going forward. Bezdin can't arrange a buyout. Bezdin can't go ahead and start splitting people's responsibilities. Bezdin doesn't have, these are not halachic concepts. This is lahavdil, they have a court of equities or a chancery division where the courts go ahead and have the authority to make things work out. If you give the Bezin the right of pshara, they have the right to go ahead and do things in order to make it more sustainable, more viable for the future. If you don't give them that authority, your psak is going to be chayav or patur. It's going to be a dollar amount, but it will not help you in the relationship. So if you're dealing with a situation, a partnership, neighbors, people who need to get along together, where it's not only a question of dollars and cents, who owes who what, it's a question of setting things up in a sustainable fashion, in such a case, you are better off signing for pshara, giving the bezdin more authority to go ahead and to make seder and to make an arrangement that will work out. Now, if you are dealing with a case which is straight dollars and cents, and you want to know which way you will do better, so that is a more difficult question to answer because it obviously will depend on the case. In general, the mukhzik will do better in din because hamoitzi mechbeil avaraya is a very strong rule. It is very often difficult to prove your case. And therefore, certainly in a general sense, the muhzik is usually better off asking for din, or at least closer to din than peshkar din, as opposed to straight pshara. However, this is not always the case. And what's important to realize is there's a basic difference between the psak that you will get in din and in pesha. When you sign for din, so halacha, and specifically chayish mishpat, has a lot of technicalities. We've been learning chayish mishpat here for quite a number of years. There, you need kinyanim. You have to, there are a lot of things that have to be followed in order to have a binding kinyan, a binding agreement. When you sign for pshara, the Beis Din will look more at the fairness of the case than on the technicalities. So you can have a situation, you have a partnership, they've been partners for 20 years, but the way the partnership was created, the right kinyan was not made, or it's a kinyan dvarim, it's a kind of partnership that strict halacha may not be recognized. In din, Beis Din will be bound to the technicalities. In pshara, Beis Din will have the right to look at what's fair, what's, you know, what should be done, and they have the right to issue a psak based on that. So whenever a person insists on din, he is increasing the chance that the case will be decided based on technicalities, based on formalities, as opposed to the fairness of the case. The verdicts based on pshara are generally much more understandable to a typical Baal Bas, because you're giving the Beis Din to use ideas of fairness, which everyone sort of understands and everyone's sort of on the same page. When you don't give them that right for pshara, when you're asking for din, then you have to be a lot more confident that you've crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's, and this arrangement is something which is binding with the technicalities of halacha, because that is what the psak will more likely reflect. So if the party wants to know what are my halachic rights, din will certainly give closer to that, or pesha karvu din. Pshara will often end up with a verdict that's either more workable in the context of a relationship, or at least more understandable, because it will take into account fairness and minhag to a much greater degree. Correct. So again, there's minhag, there's sittum to this, dinim al-chus din. There are all sorts of ways where halacha, even the formalities, will adapt to the situation at hand. But very often you won't meet that bar, or there'll be a suffix whether you met the bar. You know, and in those cases, din will, the result will be surprising to everyone. Pesher, the Beis Din is much more likely. They won't ignore the din, but they will slant it to make it to more reflect what people consider fair. Now, the point in at least in pshara that we didn't get to yet is what happens if there's a pshara betayus, someone either forces a pshara and someone wants to back out afterwards when he realizes how much he gave away, and that in Mitzvah Hashem we'll discuss next week.